Hey guys, it's Brian Berger from The High Spot. Thank you for listening to this High Spot podcast episode. This is our interview that Jeff and I conducted with Josh Lopez, huge contributor to Between the Ropes. And we talked to him about all things, not just World Wrestling Entertainment. We talked to him about TNA, Ring of Honor, Global Force, and just a great conversation about just the state of professional wrestling and where we'd like to see it go and where it's kind of in right now. So listen up. This is Josh Lopez, Jeff, and I on the High Spot podcast.
Oh, Brian, how apropos that you play that song.
I never get tired of that song, Jeff.
It is
ever.
Awesome. It is awesome.
I taped up my hands. I'm in the paint right now as an homage.
You ended up buying all that stuff when we went to WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, yeah. I emptied my pockets.
You got the whole Balor shirt. You got the wrist straps, the headgear, the paint. Good stuff, bro. But again, how apropos that you play that music because someone who had a great 4th of July weekend was Finn Balor. And right now joining us talking about NXT and all Ring of Honor news and Lucha Underground, who will get us informed of
basically,
that. Because
basically
all we talk
everything
about is,
of wrestling, yeah.
Because all we talk about is, you know, we spend time on WWE because we love it. But, you know, we also want to get you informed on everything else that's going on in the wrestling world, especially the Wednesday night kind of mini wrestling battles going on when you have NXT and you have Ring of Honor and TNA. So it's going to be a good chance for us to talk to our next guest. And you can follow him at Josh Lopez CSR. He is a contributor to Between the Ropes. Great articles, again, on NXT and, again, also on Ring of Honor. And he comes on today. He's also has his own pro wrestling experience for ChicagolandSportsRadio.com. Josh, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm coming out here. Probably one of the nicest days in Chicago that we're going to get this year. I'm actually having a pretty good night. How about you guys?
Nice, man. How's the weather like? When you say nice, how nice is it out there right now?
It's about like 75. That's probably the best we'll get without it being like humid or just raining outside.
Awesome, man. And now we were talking about Finn Balor, and he had a great 4th of July weekend winning the NXT title from Kevin Owens. Did you catch? Of course, you did catch it, but what did you think? Was it everything and more?
Yeah, I thought it was perfect for the way it was set up. Just that whole sequence and the stage and just the overall presentation of Beast of the East as a special, I thought it was well done, and it was well worth me getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, Chicago time, to come to the event.
So you actually did get up.
Yeah, I didn't even go to sleep for 2 days throughout the 4th of July weekend.
That's dedication, Jeff. Dedication.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
the Balor and Owens match, I thought it was awesome. It's the Michael Cole commentary and Byron Saxton going back in the background knowledge until Balor's career before that was pretty cool. I thought it was a good decision on the WWE Network then to play the documentary of Finn Balor before the show started. And I thought the match was fantastic. I thought Kevin Owens wasn't affected by the loss, even though he lost to John Cena at Money in the Bank. But the match was phenomenal.
There's no question about that, Josh. I mean, when Jeff and I saw it, we were like, wow, this is kind of what, I mean, I consider myself a hardcore wrestling fan, but this is what I enjoyed watching the most. And, you know, believe it or not, I could have done without the commentating because, you know, watching NXT and watching Raw and SmackDown sometimes, it kind of gets tough to watch it. But besides the Finn Balor, Kevin Owens thing, I mean, this is great for NXT because, you know, it gives the ability now for Kevin Owens to move up. So, like, where do you see now Finn Balor going in all this? I asked Jeff, like, where was the next rivalry for you? What's the next thing for Finn Balor? He's going to celebrate, obviously, but now there's got to be a next competitor. Who's the next guy, you think?
That all kind of depends on when Samoa Joe's actually going to do only WWE stuff. You know, he's got one of the most unique contracts in the world of professional wrestling today. I think it would be kind of early to rush into that view, but it does make sense, you know. NXT always does stuff when firing when the iron's hot, especially when new guys come in. But I think realistically, I could see him either feud with Tyler Breeze or Baron Corbin.
Yeah, Baron Corbin's been getting a huge push in NXT. He just, you know, he just beats down everybody. You could question the level of competition. You could say Rhino put him over, but, you know, he's just been mowing him down. You know, who exactly, you know, it's not a who's who. But Baron Corbin's good. But I was also thinking, how about Rhino, though? I mean, he does have a 2-0 gores against Finn Balor. So, you know, that's the score, 2-0. Maybe they do, like, a quick little match there between the two. Maybe finish that. Maybe settle the score.
I think so. I think it won't last long. I think it'll be, like, a month feud or so. But it does make sense with how Rhino has been getting the better of Finn Balor, even before the Beast in the East special. I just don't know what's the next step, especially with, you know, it was announced today that Balor's defending the title at the NXT TakeOver show in Brooklyn against Kevin Owens in a rematch before SummerSlam. So you got that still there. I just don't think the Rhino and Balor feud will go that much longer, but yeah, it makes sense after that next NXT TakeOver special.
You know, what made more sense for me as a huge Jericho fan was actually Jericho in the ring. To me, that was the match of the night. For the first match, it was the match of the night, and the thing that amazes me still to this day is how Jericho can still go. I mean, what did you think of that match between him and Neville, which Jericho actually got injured a little bit from that? He hurt his neck.
Yeah,
exactly. But again, for you, what did you think about the match, and could you see yourself seeing Jericho back on TV?
I would love to see Jericho back on TV. It's all about timing, and I think Jericho has been unfortunate of missing out the past couple of WrestleManias and some cool matches that maybe could have happened if he actually decided to work at WrestleMania. For example, he could have had a match with like a Daniel Bryan this past year if Daniel Bryan was going to be in the main event. Jericho could have fought a guy like Dean Ambrose, so Ambrose wouldn't have been lost into that ladder match for the IC title, which I loved, and I had a fun time watching it in person in Santa Clara this year. But I think it's all about timing, and I'd love to see Jericho come back. Whether he's just doing a couple of matches in their NXT is subjective, but as far as the match concerned with Neville, I thought it was awesome. Obviously, he had the Battle of Purple Tights, but besides that, the match was cool. I probably thought that was the best outing and showcase for not only Jericho, since he does his part-time schedule, but also a great showcase for Neville, since he came up to the main roster.
And, you know, again, too, you're right. I think Jericho's tights were a little bit better than Neville's, though. You got to love the you know, little glitter that Jericho has on his Y2J tights. But, you know, again, Jericho can still go, and you know what, he really does a great job in getting the guy over. Even in the loss, Neville still looks strong, so Jericho, he's good with that. He always puts the young guys in a great spot, and he's not selfish. He cares more about the quality of the match and storyline and the performance. So I mean, Jericho is like a rare breed, because he's good for these guys too. And even in a part-time role, if you get him in a good storyline in one of these guys, I mean, the Bray Wyatt one I think was underrated, but if you put him in a good storyline with one of these young guys, I think it really would help them out.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and that's why I mentioned earlier, if Jericho was going to do some stuff with the main roster, I thought him being the heel against either Ambrose and Daniel Bryan would have been tremendous.
Now, NXT TakeOver is coming in Brooklyn, so you know, did you go to the NXT TakeOver but the special for WrestleMania weekend in San Jose?
I unfortunately did not. I got in Friday night that weekend.
Oh, dude, that was the best event I have been to ever.
Let me ask you this. So they're in the San Jose University Center, right?
San Jose State, yeah.
Yeah. So the stage wasn't that big, right? But how packed was the arena?
Dude, it was crowded. It was. I think it seats like 5,000 people, so wow. you could get that feel. Like it was like an ECW crowd. Okay, yeah. if you looked around, you're like, wow, this is what ECW must have been like, minus the, you know, the
barbed wire
and urinating another person next to you and all that stuff. You know, it was you know what it was? It happened at like around 11 o'clock at night. and all the, you know, all the kids in the John Cena shirts were tucked in bed waiting for access in the morning the next day. And it was like, okay, put the children to sleep and let's watch the wrestling fans watch a wrestling show. And that's what we got. It was amazing. From the first match to last match was amazing.
Now, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. And, you know, like, I was talking about timing earlier. Even after the success of the NXT show for WrestleMania, do you think they would actually do a takeover this time, the day or maybe a couple days before WrestleMania in the town where WrestleMania would be?
I think that, you know what, they have the network and they can put whatever they want on it. I really think that they realize how successful it was, and I think next year for WrestleMania, I think that you'll see it at least on the network. You'll see that special on the network. It was probably, and you know, people were yelling better than Mania at the event, and Mania hadn't even happened yet. So you know, I definitely see them putting it on the network next year.
Yeah, this was like a test. That was a test for them basically, where it was a live event. It made sense. You're going to have wrestling fans from all over the world come to watch it because, you know, you didn't have only WWE there, but you had Ring of Honor as well in that area as well and all their indie promotions, promoting their federations and their divisions. But, yeah, it would make perfect sense for them to do it. And what I've been hearing, too, is that since there's been such huge success for the Beast from the East that they'll probably be doing other live events on the network, too, which would be great because I'm sure you've been to many live events, Josh, and you would just say the live event there is a lot different than when you go to, for example, a SmackDown or a Raw. It's a different type of feeling. You know, there's no time limit, so it just feels like a slower pace that you can actually enjoy, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and of course it goes with basically like presentation of which shows you go to. When you come to a Raw or SmackDown, obviously you got that big Titantron, that big setup, so you're distracted. You're looking at what's going on screen more than you are actually. It's kind of like a double-edged sword because like when you're watching it or going to a live show like for a Raw or SmackDown, it's like, okay, it's like the same thing if I'm watching at home, but I'm closer to the action. When you have like a live event for a Ring of Honor or NXT, you're like, you're right there. It's an intimate environment. You're seeing what's going on. And also at the same time, and I can speak from personal experience, when I'll tell you a show like maybe a Ring of Honor or any local Chicago independent show here, I'm just sitting back there and having a good time just watching the show. I'm not overanalyzing everything that's going on. I'm just there to enjoy the event as it is.
Now, speaking of being in Chicago, now the fans, Raw was there recently at the Allstate Arena. Now, we know that Chicago fans are like one of the best fans, if not the best wrestling fans out there. What is the best show that you've caught in Chicago, or which is the best show that you've seen so far right now since you've been, you know, a wrestling fan?
I've been fortunate enough to go to many events growing up as a kid, you know, getting to see The Rock and Hulk Hogan in the ring for the first time after No Way Out 2000 Chicago. And then that Raw before WrestleMania 27 when John Cena and The Rock were in the ring for the first time and Cena gave The Rock that AA. As far as Raws that I've been to that stood out to me as memorable, it would have to be that Raw in Chicago before WrestleMania 30 this year. This is the environment. CM Punk's my favorite wrestler, and I even got annoyed with the bevy of CM Punk fans there. But it's just the environment, you know. I really thought that Raw before WrestleMania really cemented everything that was going to happen on that year's WrestleMania. He had a great segment with Daniel Bryan and Triple H. I can keep going on and on. As far as pay-per-views, Money in the Bank 2011 is probably the best show I've ever got to attend to in person in Chicago.
The feeling must have been great there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I was fortunate enough. I think the video's out there, but if you go to Punk's entrance, you'll see me on there. I'm first row in the upper deck section, so you'll see me on there.
Wow, some pretty good seats. Some scalp tickets, or you're able to get those online?
Yeah, it was a last-minute thing because I actually went to vacation in all the places, Ohio, before that event even happened. And it was a lot of fun. That show in particular was the primary reason why I wanted to get into this wrestling media world and become a broadcaster and fulfill my lifelong dream of actually becoming a wrestling commentator.
Oh, a wrestling commentator, huh? So you'd be like, listen, Vince, I'm doing it my way, and I'm actually going to call holds. I'm not going to, you know, tell stories, but, you know, we're missing a lot of we wish we had commentators that did that. But no, that's awesome, man. Like, have you done any kind of commentating at all? Or, you know, are you starting off with podcasts and with your articles?
I did some spot shows in the suburbs of Illinois last year for a couple shows on AEW Pro on Twitter. A great independent organization here in Chicago. Besides that, I do a lot of my study just based off the network and watching those Legends of Wrestling panels they do on various subjects. And I do study the proper way. I'm not part of the IWC. I'm not an internet wrestling fan. Either way, I don't care what people are in the business label you on. Just a wrestling fan. But I really do study the proper way. I don't need dirt sheets to feed me my perspective of professional wrestling. And I study from Paul Heyman. I study from even a Mike Tenay. I think a guy like Mike Tenay is very underrated. Tony Schiavone and, of course, the great Bobby Heenan. And the thing is, the broadcaster just graduated from broadcasting school about a year and a half ago. And seeing guys like JBL or Josh Matthews on the commentary team makes my skin crawl. And so I'm as much critical of the commentary today as you guys are. And I love broadcasting. That's the reason why I got into wrestling. JR is the reason that got me hooked into wrestling. It wasn't a wrestler. It wasn't a match. It was actually JR that got me into wrestling.
You spoke before about, you know, when I mentioned Jericho, how, like, wow, you know, it would just be great to put him on TV. You know, the lack of storyline depth of investing in there. Do you think it's something that could be started, for example, in Ring of Honor, that they do a great job of doing that, and TNA tries their best? But where do you see the differences in terms of that in, you know, places like Ring of Honor, TNA, and now Global Force, which is probably it's going to be merging with TNA as well?
I think the issue with, like, Ring of Honors or TNA, or for example, I'm excluding Lucha because Lucha is not a wrestling show. It's a TV show, and you have TV writers. Yeah, you have a couple guys that have experience as former WWE writers, but Lucha is a TV show. They know what they're doing because they're different. They establish what their brand is. When you see a Ring of Honor or a TNA, it's not a knock on them. I understand it. There's a lot of fans from WCW that hate the WWE because WCW didn't know how to run their business, so it runs on to WWE, and they're like, oh, WWE ruined the professional wrestling business. And a lot of these companies, like a TNA and ROH, present this thing where, oh, we're going to have these guys that got fired by WWE or released or left on bad terms, and then they're going to come on the screen and say, oh, screw WWE, this is the real wrestling show. If you have to mention another wrestling company, I don't care if it's TNA or WWE or whatever, if you need to mention another wrestling company to get your promo over, people are going to latch onto that other wrestling show because you're mentioning them. I don't want to hear a guy from GFW in their first promo whenever they have a TV show come out and say, oh, this is not WWE, this is not TNA, this is GFW, like something like ECW would do back in the day. You know why? Because how's that establishing what your company is? How's that establishing what your storylines is? Why I think a lot of people say that TNA storylines relate to WWE because TNA tries to be too much like WWE, and then ROH is too focusing on what WWE is doing and then what their business is doing.
Getting to TNA, and just flat out, the question will be to you is, can TNA be saved?
It's unfortunate because I look at wrestling more positively than most other people, especially in the wrestling media today. And I understand it, and they're justified for their issues with TNA. I've been a TNA fan since the beginning, and obviously I don't want any of the guys to lose their jobs due to Nimrod-ed business owners. But you gotta say, you know, they only got themselves to blame. I don't know how they can save themselves when they don't know what direction they have. I talked to Magnus yesterday for an interview I did for my radio show yesterday, and he told me about his title reign was just a pure example of why TNA is in the issue they're in right now. They spent too much time spinning their wheels in too many different directions instead of establishing a base of what they are, where they want to go with their company, and then executing it. They go too many different directions. They don't look at the bigger picture. And TNA always got themselves to blame for the position they are in right now.
I was watching TNA, actually the probably only one time I've seen it in a long time, and that was when Jeff Jarrett showed up, and he was, you know, plugging GFW and also the King of the Mountain, which he was going to compete at. And, you know, that show, for that 1 hour where, you know, I could see the wrestling and the American Wolves were there, and they're in that best of seven for the tag, it was best of five or best of seven?
Best of five.
Best of five. Okay, so yeah, that was amazing to me, and I think it was like and to me, I was like, wow, they really have a chance. And to see them, you know, struggling and having to merge maybe with GFW just says, wow, it should have been better, you know. So do you think this merger with GFW, you know, is a start, maybe a new beginning for TNA?
It'll only be a new beginning for TNA is if they actually merge and Dixie Carter actually leads the wrestling business for good. And she has no part of it. If John Gabor wants to be in there due to his experience with the WWE, fine and dandy. A lot of wrestling companies outside of WWE struggle with production issues. And I feel TNA has been doing a solid job, even though the shows are taped with production values, with how the stage looks and all that. But I honestly feel that TNA and GW merging is not going to do GFW or TNA any favors.
Well, there definitely needs to be something. I mean, I think when, at least for me, when I look at the rosters of TNA and listening to interviews that Jeff Jarrett does for Global Force, there's a lot of, they try to be positive, like you talk. We always want to be negative about professional wrestling. But yeah, Something that Jeff and I always talk about, specifically now, especially with the emergence of NXT, and we look at all these guys that have been brought from, for example, you know, Neville. I still call him Adrian Neville, Finn Balor, Hideo Tommy was Kenta. I look at all the talent they've grabbed, and it kind of reminded me of the days of WCW. You'd see all these wrestlers from different countries be brought in, like the Cruiserweight division. So if I look at a roster like Global Force and TNA, I think one positive is the fact that they're taking a depleted roster, in my opinion, and merging it together to try to create more creativity. But if I look at it from your perspective, who on that roster could you look at? You know, besides Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett, who have kind of, you know, they're kind of dwindling in the stages of their career just because that's the way the business is. I mean, who there could you build a company out of? Or build a champion, say, this is the face of our company. We want him to be the face of this new federation, Global Force.
If you want to do it right, because the guy is still younger, you could still go with a guy like Magnus, or you could go with a guy like Chris Masters. And I'm only going off of what they got right now. EC3, I got to give it up to Tina. You know, even while a lot of people, and I've at times nitpicked on what they've done storyline-wise, one thing they've done better than even WWE for a certain extent, they built up EC3 in a nice traditional way, taking out the legends and becoming a TNA World Heavyweight Champion. I thought they did that fantastically. But is EC3, is Ethan Carter III going to be a face of a franchise that you could build to a mainstream audience? I mean, that's the topic that people need to talk about if you want these companies to compete with the WWE. It's that simple. Mainstream and mainstream advertisers do not care about professional wrestling. You know why WWE labels themselves sports entertainment? It's because of that. It's because they are a publicly traded company. If they were still a private company like they were in the late 90s, sure, I'm sure they would be doing professional wrestling right now. They'll say, oh, this is the best professional wrestling in our federation right now, but that's not the case. So when you're talking about who from a roster, from a mainstream perspective, is going to bring TNA or GFW up to the next level, it's not going to be a Jeff Jarrett. It's not going to be a Kurt Angle because they're pro wrestling guys. They're not mainstream. Who's going to be the guy that latches out on the screen from either roster to you guys? I'm asking this. Which guys from the roster do you really think could become mainstream stars from either company?
Well, I mean, to me, well, we'll get to the to the main stars, but they have, to me, one of the best tag teams in the American Wolves. I give them credit for that. Magnus, to me, but you know what? To me, the guy that I see that I think that could be marketed, and it's a guy that the WWE let go, and he's actually married to Charlotte, is Bram, right? Bram, and I think he's got the look. And I think that he, to me, is one of those guys that you could build around. Like I was saying, like Magnus too. And you know what? You know, maybe he's up there, but you know, maybe like Robbie Roode and stuff like that. He too. You know, to me, he should have been, you know, the guy. But again, it just maybe doesn't work out. Maybe TNA lost faith and everything like that. But I think he should have, you know, maintained that title. And I think there were better ways to promote him. But again, I think what they need to do is, I think they just need to stick to the and you know, the wrestling maybe, but don't try to go over the top. Like, for example, like when they did the whole Eric Young title run, it looked so much like Daniel Bryan, and they tried to be so much like WWE at the time that they got heat for that. It was so obvious that that's what they were doing. So I think if they just, you know, if they do their wrestling, do the talking, and they do that, I think that they'll never be WWE. They'll never be number one. But you know what? That fight for number two is still there, you know? And to say that NXT is really the number two brand, it is, and it's under the WWE flagship, that's fine. But right now, you know, they can still compete with NXT, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think they need to set their sights, you know, just to, you know, let's go for number two, and there's nothing wrong with that. Even though it's not the way to think that me and you would think, like, oh, you know, you always try to be number one, but let's be realistic. You know, there's nothing wrong with being number two, you know, in this business.
Yeah, and another thing, Josh, that I would always have conversations with Jeff about, maybe you agree with me here, is that, you know, I look at the TNA roster, and if I were to nitpick and pick somebody, it'd be kind of tough right now because, like you said, they kind of go blend and they go in one direction, and then they say, this is the guy, and then they go in another direction and say, this is the guy. So you as an audience will have a chance to kind of say, okay, well, let me give this guy an opportunity to see what he's got because you're putting this much emphasis on him, and then before you know it, you're going to, you know, pull the rug out from under me and give me somebody else. Jeff brought up a great – Bram was a great option. I think Drew Galloway, who is Drew McIntyre.
There you go. Drew Galloway, there you go.
Is kind of the – you know, you could say the prototypical WWE superstar, but again, he's got a great look to him. He's got that tough, you know, I'll kick your ass mentality type of thing. But the biggest thing for me that I have the biggest gripe and I always complain about is I always feel, and maybe it has something to do with who's ever running it, but I always feel it has to be organic. I mean, us as wrestling fans, I wouldn't say we dictate everything because the ultimate decision is always from the promoter, but we have a good idea of, we look at them like, wow, I want to see more of that guy. And give me more of him. And with, for example, the new current TNA World Champion, it's hard because you said he had a great, you know, transition. They were building him up the proper way, like kind of old school. But it didn't feel organic to me. I felt like they were force feeding him, and you could kind of tell, oh, they're trying to make this guy the guy. And I think when fans see that, a bit of resentment comes. I mean, do you feel that resentment when you feel like you're being force fed something that you really don't want?
Was it force fed because started off the bat being portrayed as the nephew of Dixie Carter, who already had a bad reputation at the time? Do you think it's a bad pairing? Hence why they feel it was forced and all that?
Not necessarily, because to me, I think the guy's got a great look, but it's the thing that we all, you, me, Jeff, we'll talk about till we're blue in the face. It's that it factor. When I first saw Fergal DeWitt, I looked at him, and Jeff showed me some clips, and I was like, wow,
that guy has something right there.
You can have the looks, you can have the body, you can have the moves, but you have to have something else. You can have the charisma, too. But the same thing, if you can't relate to the audience or have that undesirable to the dynamic that you can't really describe, we can only kind of make it up, that's what I feel force-fed, like, for example.
Well, then TNA should just stick to the wrestling, then, because let me tell you, there are the demographic that WWE appeals to, but you know what? Let's not hide the fact that there are the wrestling fans, and they will watch, whether, you know, they're not going to give you 3.0 ratings on Destination America, but the 0.8 are watching because they want to see the wrestling, and when they see them, you know, go away from that, that's when they will rebel and they don't want to see it. So, I mean, let their wrestling do the talking. And to me, that's how they can build it up.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let the wrestling speak for themselves. And also, like I mentioned earlier, just identify who you are. If you're going to be the main wrestling brand, just do that. Stop worrying what every other wrestling company is doing. And I agree to a certain point where you're talking about the it factor. Like, I agree with you guys. I'd rather connect to a guy that's like, wow, you show this to a casual fan or somebody that's not even a wrestling fan, and then be like, wow, that guy would be on one of those major wrestling companies, blah, 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 than just a guy that's, oh, okay, he's there. He's okay. He has a nice skill set, but is he really going to bring in the money like that other guy I saw? Wow, this guy's amazing at everything he does. And I think as far as guys that I feel that really stood out and I feel TNA has really dropped the ball with is Lashley.
Okay.
I mean, the guy is totally reinvented himself. Yeah, he's getting up there in age, but with the whole MMA background, and I really felt they did him a disservice with ending his power rank. I really thought he was hitting his stride. And then I know the guy just left the company, but Austin Aries, from a certain standpoint, he had something clicking in 2012 when he won that X Division title. And then Jeff Hardy came back to the company from WWE, one of the hottest things in the world. And like I mentioned earlier, TNA decided to spin his wheels, left Aries out of the shuffle. I thought TNA had their opportunity to really showcase their actual first guy besides AJ Styles. And they just went to the former WWE guy because he has name identity. And I just feel that times TNA, like you guys mentioned earlier, pulled the rug from these guys because they're not former WWE guys, and TNA focused on too much on who's available that left other companies instead of building their own stars.
And they had a nice blend too. I mean, even when Bully Ray was there, they had a nice mix of veterans and young guys, you know, and it was watchable. So the thing, what I wanted to, you know, get to now is we're talking about, you know, Dixie Carter, and we're talking about, you know, who could give them the direction. And, you know, and I was a little doubter in the beginning, but, you know, Triple H, when the time comes, I think that the WWE is in very good hands, because I think out of anybody, he has the best grasp on what the wrestling fan wants. I mean, yeah, he's got a, Vince McMahon is still the boss, and we'll still see that, you know, sophomoric humor, and we'll see that, you know, those backstage segments that make no sense. But, you know, but Triple H, I mean, what he's done with NXT and the way, you know, the crowd wants, you know, to cheer for Finn Balor, and they get Finn Balor, and they get a great montage, the three-part documentary series on him. And I'm like, wow, this is a guy that I want to root for. Kevin Owens. What a great way to build him up. And the first time he's there, he starts a rivalry with Sami Zayn, and he made a huge impact. So to me, you're talking about people that you would want to run your company. I mean, Triple H is if not the man, he's right up there, because to me, he has the best grasp on what the wrestling fan wants.
I think Triple H has a good grasp of what the wrestling fans want, due to the fact that he's in charge of NXT, and I think it's a smart business decision. But at the same time, you know, Triple H plays favorites to what the internet fans want, so they can latch on and buy onto the WWE network more than, oh, I found something that's interesting that's not being showcased in today's wrestling, and I want to show Vince that I could do something and that he could trust me whenever he hands the reins down to the company. Triple H is a smart businessman, just as anybody. You know, you see why he's showcased in major storylines, even though he doesn't wrestle as much as he did back in the day. I'm not going to be one of those guys who be like, oh, he slept his way up to the corporate, you know what I mean. So, like,
he slept with the boss's daughter, and now is the running the company type of thing.
Hey, listen, we're just hating because
you're
smart.
Hey, you got to do everything. You got to do whatever it takes to keep your spot. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, and I'm not. Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. You know, it's like at the same time, while Triple H is doing a great job of playing favorites to what the internet fans want and who's hot on the indie scene, I think at times, and I mentioned this in my past NXT articles when I did my power rankings for this past month's Wrestling Wednesday, I feel that at times the TV show NXT this strictly the NXT TV show. I'm not talking about the TakeOver specials, because sometimes I think as us as fans, we see a special from NXT on the TakeOver, and God, it's the greatest thing ever. Anything that's representative of what happened in the month prior, that's not the case. For a guy like me that's actually watching the show every single week and watches the matches and all that and et cetera, I think sometimes NXT, the TV shows, hit and miss. And
I
I think sometimes Triple H plays too much favor to those indie guys, and he doesn't really make those WWE-based developmental guys stand out.
No, I totally agree. And two examples to the fact is, listen, I mean, there's times where I feel like, oh, a little bit of the Raw writing has invaded NXT because, you know, they do too many backstage scenes that they do. And, you know, the whole Bull Dempsey thing with the overweight issue to me just was like, oh, man, somewhere in Stanford, Vince McMahon is chuckling at that. So, you know, you do kind of like, eh, you know. So my question is to you, first of all, would you like to divulge your power rankings? Who, you know, name me at least a top, your top three right now in NXT? Since you mentioned your rankings, do you want to give us like you know, number one and number to number five?
Oh, I could do that. That's perfectly fine. And I'm excluding Kevin Owens out of the picture now because he's basically part of the main roster, so I'm not having him on this list. But number five, I got to put Charlotte there. Obviously, she's amazing, and even though I feel she's been lost in limbo since those epic title matches that she had with Sasha Banks, I think she's awesome for what she does as a performer, so I have her at five. Number four, I would say Tyler Breeze. I think Tyler Breeze is a great performer. I think he gets better as the weeks go by. And one thing that I enjoy about Tyler Breeze, and maybe I enjoy more than a Finn Balor or whatever, the guy fights other guys. It may be squash matches here and there, but the guy gets to work other opponents, and I appreciate that about him. And I think he has an interesting character, especially with that new Zoolander movie that's coming out.
Yeah,
next
you
year.
Can mix that
what
up.
What a perfect opportunity to capitalize on that. Number three, Kaz and Enzo. These guys are so entertaining. I love them as a tag team. You know, everybody loves Kaz and Enzo, and I love them because they're different and they're them. They're not portraying an act. They're not pretending to be New York guys like the Bromance, for example, in TNA. They are New York-based guys, and the fans noticed that. Number two, Sasha Banks. I think she's amazing. Personal feelings aside for me feeling that she's super hot from that standpoint. Yeah, I think she's tremendous. And then, of course, number one would have to be Balor.
Yeah, that's not a bad top
list
five
right there.
NXT puts out on a weekly basis.
It's just a bummer now that like guys like Tadeo and Sammy are out with injuries. And I didn't put Joe and Rhino on the list because with success with Rhino, he does more shows than Joe does. I just don't know what they're going to do with their storylines down there. But I have a good, solid big picture outlook for what those five guys do.
You know, I don't think that they gave us what we wanted. We wanted to see Owens and Samoa Joe, and we didn't really get to see it. You have to assume that Kevin Owens gets, you know, promoted and stays on the main roster eventually. But, you know, there was a chance there to have a stellar match there, and you didn't get a chance to. So I feel like we got robbed.
Yeah, you know, that's just one match that ended in double disqualification. Just really didn't do anything. And then they automatically rushed into a Finn Balor, Joe against Owens Rhino match. I mean, I know NXT TakeOver is where you want to showcase everything that's hot with the angles and everything, but maybe sometimes in between these NXT TakeOvers, why not build to a Balor and Joe? Balor and Joe versus Owens and Rhino match, then wasting it on a NXT show. You know what I mean? On a random NXT show in the first month of July.
Well, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, Josh. It's sometimes I think people, you know, I would hate to use the word spoiled, but sometimes I remember watching the first couple of NXT tapings. It was so good. You kind of expect it to always be that way. But unfortunately, when you're in the same crowd and you're taping four shows at the same time, back to back to back, you could tell the crowd's not really into it. And there are going to be moments where it's pretty bland and vanilla, and it doesn't hit a home run anymore. It's a hit and miss.
But something that's not a hit and miss, and something that I was actually excited for watching Raw, this last Raw, was you know, Kevin Owens, there's no question he's on the main roster. I think John Cena has done a great job. As much as I bash him all the time, being Super Cena and things of that nature, has done an amazing job bringing some relevancy back. And that's another thing that Jeff and I have discussed here on the podcast before, and we've kind of written about, is the lack of the prestige of the titles, mainly the Intercontinental title and the United States title. And John Cena has done an amazing job with that. And now this whole rivalry with the rubber match with Kevin Owens coming in at Battleground. That match on Raw with Cesaro, back-to-back matches from SmackDown and Raw, do you see Cesaro some way? Has he earned his way into making this a triple threat match? Or do you think it's just going to, you know, he's just kind of won the crowd over a little bit and it's still a long ways to go for him?
Oh, yeah. Especially with the last two matches that he had with Cena, I don't know why he wouldn't be part of it. Then you just have one final Owens and Cena match singly at SummerSlam.
Makes sense.
Battleground. I don't know why you waste your final Owens and Cena match at Battleground then immediately rush into an Owens Cesaro match at SummerSlam. That's something you can do down the road, especially with these fall months coming up soon. And sometimes they don't really have exciting matches in the fall with these specials on the network. So I think you do Owens and Cesaro later on in the year. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I think he's deserving of it. I agree with you. I'm not a big John Cena fan. I don't harp on him as much as other people do, but I think John Cena is having probably one, if not the best year of his career wrestling-wise. The triple threat match of the Rumble speaks for itself. I thought the John Cena-Rusev U.S. storyline mid-card-wise was fantastic. And, of course, these U.S. Open challenges, I think, as opposed to having John Cena come out for a 20-minute, hey, everybody, how's it going? And then talking about his opponent and the usual stuff that you get with John Cena. Now you have John Cena really being focused on guys who are coming after his spot in the company. He's trying to prove himself against these younger guys. I think John Cena is really taking away that reputation of, oh, he's only thinking about himself and he only puts himself over in the business. That typical scenario that you get with John Cena these days. But as far as the other stuff, I mean, like, when it comes to, like, making the titles prestigious, I think it's kind of subjective now these days because, like, if a guy is not on the title's not on the guy, like, either you or I like or any other people like, that title ends up being presented like a prop. Oh, it's just there because it's not on the guy that I like or I think deserves to hold the title. So I really don't put much stock into that prestige thing because the moment the title is on somebody that we don't like, oh, it's not prestigious anymore. Oh, it's just a prop because they want to give it to different people because they don't know how to bring up anything creative with new storylines for a title. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, I mean, I would agree with you to that point. I mean, I think it's been more of a prop than ever before. Both titles, the United States Intercontinental title, especially during the era that, you know, I'm sure you, I, and Jeff love the most, which was the Attitude Era, those titles were just props. You know, do you think it could ever go back to the way it once was before, where when you looked at the Intercontinental Championship, you know, in this case now we have the United States as well, that those were like the marks of, all right, listen, we have the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, he's the man right now, but these two guys, whoever ends up holding these two, whether you like them or not, you know they can go. And I think even back in the day when we didn't like, you know, Rick Rude or we didn't like Shawn Michaels at the time,
they're the next
we
guys.
All knew that those were the next guys and those are the guys that could go. As much as we wanted to see them lose, man, we loved watching them get their ass kicked and barely escaping. You're like, ah, you know, next time our guy's going to get it. But you knew that was the next guy, too. Once he dropped the title, it was going to be the next guy up.
I totally agree with you. I think that can happen only if, I don't know if you guys will agree with me or not, but I always think
probably
that
not.
Can happen. I don't like that tone you're doing right now. I only think that can happen if there's two world championships because I don't think maybe a guy that loses an IC title, for example, like a Ryback, would be thrust into a WWE world title picture as opposed to a John Cena because, like, there's only going to be certain guys, and we know just from watching the shows these weeks, who's really going to be in that main event title scene. And I think some of the guys that are in that IC title or U.S. Divisions, if you will, are going to be lost in the shuffle because there's not two championships anymore. So, like, when we talk about guys like Team Barrett or Dolph Ziggler or a Stardust, for example, being lost by a shuffle, there's something creative for them to do. I think if the actual World Heavyweight Championship was still around, they would have been a World Heavyweight Champion by then, and we wouldn't have to worry about them being lost in the shuffle. I know a lot of people really didn't care about the World Heavyweight Championship a couple of years ago, but at the same time, that title being away has brought these guys being lost in the shuffle because there's only one world title around, and not everybody's going to be able to go after Seth Rollins for that championship.
No, that's true. You do bring a good point. I mean, I kind of feel it was kind of deluding when you had a world and WWE champion, but you know, maybe that's what they need to do to bring some type of, I guess, variety here so we can see more guys. And if
Daniel Bryan didn't get injured, I think the Intercontinental title would have been in the same category because you saw Daniel Bryan and John Cena tag team on SmackDown, and you could see it that they're really going to make a good case for the Intercontinental title to become prestigious again. But man, as a fan of that title, and when it meant back in the 90s with Mr. Perfect and Rick Rude and you know, just all the people that held that, and then the Bret Harts and the Shawn Michaels, you know, it's a little sad to see it because, you know, there's a lot of Ryback fans and there's some detractors. But when you have a triple threat with Big Show, The Miz, and Ryback, to me, honestly, you know, they're all, you know, I respect them. They're, you know, they're great performers, and that's fine. But, you know, you wish that Daniel Bryan didn't get hurt because, to me, that title, I mean, that title, you would have to, like, try to push it for 5 more years because, to me, that title has lost the most meaning out of any title. And it's a sad commentary because that title, to me, was, like, back then, that was it. You were it. You were the number two, and you were the standard bearer as far as wrestling-wise because you knew the number one guy would be the guy that gets marketed and the guy that would, you know, bring the fans. But the worker was the Intercontinental Champion, and it's just upsetting to me now how far that title has just gone down. And when you say you have to have two world champions, you know, it still doesn't solve the Intercontinental title, and it's just a sad commentary to make. That title to me was so to me was even better than being the heavyweight champion, you know. And it's just sad to where the title's been, you know, right now. It's just to me it's sad.
Timing is always a major thing. And when you look at the main event for Battleground real quick, Brock Lesnar getting his rematch against Seth Rollins, I foresaw this as something, you know, you wait till SummerSlam for it. It kind of seemed like more desperation. And I got to admit to you, I'm not liking this new Brock Lesnar where the fans were going to cheer him regardless because he was a badass. But now the fact that they're cheering him and he's like he's going up against the authority and going against, you know, fighting for, you know, not supposedly everybody else. I mean, one or two things. How do you see the outcome of this title match coming where Brock Lesnar still looks on the good side of it? Because, again, you're paying him the money. He's the showcase guy. And two, how do you liken this new Brock Lesnar that we're seeing now?
Well, obviously it's going to give WWE good business because people are latching onto a face Brock Lesnar, and JR always mentions on his podcast about how much business WWE is going to get off of Suplex City merchandise, and I think it's
I got my shirt.
I know, right? I got one coming soon. I ordered it instead of waiting 50 minutes at the arena this past Monday night. But
oh yeah, and you're anyway, you're always going to overpay buying it at the arena.
Know, right?
Yeah.
I know, right? And I think it's been okay. We only had a month of this run, so I really can't base full judgment of, oh, this is not going to work or whatever, because I need to see a couple more months, then I'll make my final opinion on it. But as far as making this interesting between Brock and Seth Rollins, I want to ask you this. Is the only way to make this feud interesting or believable is if Paul Heyman screws Brock Lesnar out of the rematch at Battleground and Seth aligns himself with Paul Heyman?
Well, I got to tell you, it would make sense, and I kind of thought, and told this to Jeff, that before we knew that Brock Lesnar wasn't going to go back to the UFC, I was thinking, you know, maybe this is where we see Roman Reigns turn heel, and now the advocate for him would be Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman would turn his back on Lesnar, and this is a way for Brock to finally leave in the sunset going back to the UFC. But we've seen this before. Of Paul Heyman turning his back on Brock Lesnar for the Big Show. I mean, even Heyman has said it in many interviews, even like prior to WrestleMania. Like, they just work well together. When you separate the two, Brock Lesnar's not good on his own.
And it would hurt Brock as far as, like, he needs an advocate. He needs someone to talk to him because Brock doesn't like to talk. And again, on the other hand, too, like, when you put Brock, when you put Heyman with Cesaro, when you put him with Ryback, it didn't work because they didn't have that chemistry. And to me, if you take Brock away from Heyman, vice versa, to me, it just works so much. I really wouldn't have Heyman screw Brock Lesnar.
I have an outcome for this match. And Josh and Jeff, tell me what you think of it. What I'm predicting to happen. A lot of people are probably thinking the Authority's going to interfere, it's going to be disqualification, and Seth Rollins, you know, slithers away with the title. This is what I see happening. For the longest time, we've seen Triple H and Seth Rollins, you know, Triple H kind of giving him the confidence that you're Seth Rollins, you're supposed to be the man, and basically kind of being his only friend in the Authority when everybody else turned their back on him. What would you think if, come Battleground, the main event, and it's all said and done, that Brock Lesnar ends up losing because of Triple H? And then once the match is over and he helps Seth Rollins wins, he pedigrees Seth Rollins and then feuds with him, saying, you know what, I deserve to be the champion because I am what represents this company. And there you have the feud with Rollins and Triple H at SummerSlam.
Yeah. Or you could do that same scenario and you have Sheamus come out and cashing the briefcase on him and really bring in that reality era of, oh, Sheamus is Triple H's boy and now he's going to be the face of the Authority.
That's a very good one too.
A lot better than mine. I kudos to you, Josh. You completely embarrassed me on my own show.
that was really good. That was really good. And you know, Sheamus, I don't like the new look.
Stupid.
But you know, he is Triple H's.
Who braids their beard? Seriously.
That's
what is he, ZZ Top or something?
Well,
come
you
on.
Used to before you shaved it off.
Yes,
though.
I used to have a gigantic beard, Josh. I never put pictures on it, but I recently shaved it. So yeah, I can't talk because I looked stupid as well. I got to admit, now Jeff caught me on that one as well. Damn, you guys are ganging up on me.
Oh, yeah, we're turning on you here. So we've made it the Jeff and Josh show.
Oh, I see. Just because we're talking about pro wrestling, you guys do the double switch on me, huh? The double heel turn. Oh, I see now. That's horrible. You can't get away. It always goes back to wrestling. Anyway, we're talking to Josh Lopez. You can catch him on Twitter at Josh Lopez CSR. Does so much great stuff for Between the Ropes. Contributor, if anything he does, I read his articles too, and they're fantastic, very well in depth, and it really seems you can take a lot of time to write and incorporate your feelings, and that's what we get when we read your articles, Josh. One more thing before we wrap it up here. It's been a great interview, and we thank you again for coming on. We all started, Jeff and I, watching this and falling in love with it, and you said, you know, in the Money in the Bank of Chicago that made you want to be more involved in this business in some capacity. What caused you to be in it? Who's your favorite wrestler growing up that said, oh, I got to be a part of
it? At the end of the day, that's the question. That's it.
That's what starts you in this
business. Who was the guy that was like, you know what, I'm going to do a promo in front of the mirror and I'm going to act like that guy? Who was it for you?
I'm going to get crap for this because it's
better not be Hulk Hogan.
No, it's not Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
Trust me, it's not him. But it's my hometown boy, and it's CM Punk, and it's only for this reason. It's not about him with the shoot promos and the pipe bombs and all that. It's that when I see CM Punk and his story and where he's gone through his journey in the business, he's the guy out of everybody in the wrestling business that I relate to the most with what my story is and how I got to where I am today. I may not be arrogant or lashing out at people as quickly as
I don't know. After this interview, they might think different.
We'll see. I'm not a bad guy at all, actually. But
that's what bad guys say. I'm not a bad guy at all. Okay, I get you.
It's Kevin Owens. I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah.
Pulling a Kevin Owens promo.
Yeah, but CM Punk's the guy that I relate to the most, and seeing a guy like him getting his crowning moment in his hometown, it rings a bell like, hey, he did something. People told him that he couldn't do it, and he couldn't reach the top of the mountain. That's basically the story of life, right? You've got people telling you, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Oh, why can't I? Why can't I do something? And Punk's the guy I relate to the most.
And, you know, the thing is, as much as, you know, the way he left the WWE, people can criticize him for that. And he's doing his thing. Hey, he did it his way. He saved up the money. He always said what was on his mind. And for those people, the detractors, at the end of the day, that Money in the Bank, he got me psyched about watching him in a Cena match just by that promo that he cut, the pipe bomb. And, you know, that was him being real. So I give him credit for that. And you know what? He changed things. He really did, because, you know, now he's in the UFC, but what he left was he changed it for the better. And we don't realize this because, you know, now, you know, he's doing his UFC thing and he may be, you know, an afterthought. I don't know if the crowd was still chanting CM Punk in Chicago. I don't know. But, you know, you look at the Balors, the Nevilles, they're getting their opportunity. And for the people that want to say, hey, you know, CM Punk should just, like, you know, stayed his contract and then left or whatever that, or not giving him the credit that he deserves on the way out. He changed things. And, you know, I totally understand, because when I saw that promo, the pipe bomb, there was a time where it was flat. The product was flat. And that single promo made me, wow, this is why I love watching this. This is why, to me, it still, you know, it still gets me, because he was real, and he said the truth, what everyone was thinking. So on his way out, I think that he changed things for the better. And what do you think his outlook is in the UFC?
One more thing before I get to that, yeah. And you hit the nail right there. I think the greatest legacy that CM Punk will leave in professional wrestling, whether he comes back or not, is the fact that he brought in the reality era in what we have today. So that's why I think Punk's biggest legacy when it comes coming out of the wrestling business.
Yeah, not to mention the title reign that he had was also something that should be applauded, because this guy who looked, you know, was not the John Cena in this John Cena mold and in the Hogan mold and the Rock mold, held that title for over 400 days. And that should be talked about more. It really should. And again, they're not going to talk about it because he's not there anymore. He left, you know, on bad terms. But, you know, besides the change, that title reign too, say what you want about it, that was amazing. In this day and age where the title switch hands so much, I can't say switch hands because a title doesn't switch hands, has to be won, according to Vince McMahon. But again, it's an amazing feat. And CM Punk did do a lot in this business.
Yeah. And I don't only think it's Vince McMahon. I think actually more of it's Kevin Dunn than Vince McMahon when it comes to everything that he's seen in today's TV. I think a lot of people don't really pay attention to how much power that schmuck really has.
Oh, you know what? He's not one of the swag guys either, from what I hear.
Yeah, he is a schmuck.
And as far as the UFC question, I hope it's everything he wants it to be. Obviously, he said this is not going to be a one-time thing, so even if he gets embarrassed in this first fight, I don't know when that's going to be. But I think he has the fire and the inspiration to prove his doubters wrong. He's done that his whole career and his whole entire life, even to the point that his family doubted him, and he decided to just do his own thing and move away from that negativity. And I think Punk, whether he's successful or not, we'll see, but I think a lot of people will admire him for the fact that he said, hey, here's something I always wanted to accomplish throughout my whole life. Here's my opportunity. I'm not letting anybody stand in my way. And if it works out, awesome. If not, hey, I got the experience and I got to try at least once.
Because at the end of the day, he did what everybody else wants. He did something he loved. He wasn't happy anymore. He saved some cash, married a hot chick, and is doing something else that he wants to do that makes him happy. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, a Puerto Rican chick.
Oh, beautiful.
And a great wrestler.
Yes. How about that? Very, very, very great. Hey, Josh, real quick, too. Summer vacation. Where would you want to go if you get a chance to this summer before it ends? Where would you want to go?
Oh, man. I've been to Puerto Rico many times. I love it down there. It wouldn't be there. Actually, to be honest, I would like to go to New York. I've never been there before. I got to be part of the media this year at WrestleMania down in Santa Clara, and I would like to do it this year with the 2K stuff out in Brooklyn for SummerSlam this year. So it'd be either New York City or Brooklyn.
Hey, listen, you know who to keep in touch then with then if you're going to do that then, and definitely, really, we'll show you around.
Yeah, Jeff will show you the great parts. I'll show you the bad parts, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always wanted to check out New York. I want to see if it's the real deal, like everybody makes it out to be. Because, you know, there's some type of rivalry with the Chicago and New York people about what city's better and all that hoopla. And I got some people I know out there that I have built a business relationship professional-wise, like Dave LaGreca, obviously, with Buff Philpin and Mike Riker. Great guys. I love them. I got to meet them down in San Jose. Fantastic guys. And also Rosenberg down in Hot 97.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and believe me, if we're hanging out in the city, we'll definitely point out to everybody that you're Chicago made.
and you're picking up the check.
Josh, okay. Thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it, and we will talk to you. We'll keep in touch, and we'll talk to you. We'd love to have you on again.
Absolutely, man. Thank you guys for inviting me coming on. It's been an honor. You guys do a great job. You guys have great. You got a great wrestling mind, and I hope this podcast works out for you guys. You guys continue doing it and building it, and I'm always here if you guys need any help or anything.
Oh, awesome, man. Do you want to plug anything on the way out?
I'm not much of a plug guy, but I'll do it. I'm at Twitter, Josh Lopez CSR. That's where basically you can find everything I'm doing. What I do play-by-play covers for all the wrestling shows that are on TV, not just WWE, for BetweenTheRopes.com and that. And when the time is right, I will write a lengthy article when I have an opinion on something.
About
and,
us. Yeah, no, I'm waiting for that.
And then Pro Wrestling Experience, that's my radio show. It's on Wednesdays on TuneIn Radio. Just type in ChicagolandSportsRadio.com from 11 to 2 Eastern Time. We just like to have fun, talk about the history of the business, and promote the positivity. I think it's the only way to stand out in a lot of these wrestling podcasts these days. But we have a lot of fun, and we welcome any type of wrestling fan. And I would love to have either one of you guys come on the show one of these days. So BTR, Josh Lopez CSR, the Pro Wrestling Experience, and that's it.
All right, Josh, you plugged in. Now get the hell out of here.
Thanks, Josh. All right. Appreciate it. And that was Josh Lopez here on the High Spot. Stick with us. We'll be back with some more High Spot.
All right, that was Josh Lopez. We'd like to thank Josh for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Had a great conversation with him, and we'd love to have him on again, no doubt, in the future, hopefully sooner than later. So you've been listening to The High Spot. For Jeff Martin, I'm Brian Berga. Thanks for listening.